All right, so everybody, hey, we're talking to Derek Trucks of Tedeschi Trucks Band, which has come to DC's Warner Theater for, I think, four shows here, February 14th through the 22nd. Thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Well, I want to take it all the way back to the beginning. Obviously, you're the nephew of Butch Trucks of Allman Brothers Band. God, one of the greatest bands of all time. But how much did you actually listen to them growing up? I mean, obviously, it's your uncle founding the thing. But how much are you aware of that? Like, what age does it start to actually, you know, percolate for you that you say, oh, wait a minute, I'm part of this legacy here?
I mean, that music was always around. It was always in the house. I mean, it's the first stuff I remember hearing. So it was never not there. You know, and my dad was a huge fan of that music. He was, he was up at those Fillmore shows, and it meant a lot to him. So it always felt unique and special. I think, you know, I came into it when I first started playing music. That was always in the background for sure.
Did you have a personal favorite Allman Brothers song?
Probably not a song. I mean, that Fillmore East record and Eat a Peach were the ones that I always loved hearing and still do. It goes back and forth. There's a handful of great ones. That studio version of Blue Sky is pretty hard to beat.
Now, were you named after Clapton, Derek and the Dominoes, or is that like an apocryphal story?
No, I think that's true. Certainly the spelling came from that. That was the other record that was in heavy rotation in the house when I was born and growing up. So, yeah, that factored in too.
Awesome. Now, describe the story for our listeners. Try to paint a visual picture for me of, you know, where you are when you get your hands on that first guitar.
I mean, it was kind of not that interesting of a story. I was, my mom would, we on the way home from school, if she'd see a garage sale, we'd stop in from time to time. And I think I had $5 in my pocket, and there was a really crappy guitar laying there. It was the only thing interesting. I didn't really have a huge drive to play at that point. It was just, it wasn't a good garage sale, and there was nothing for a 8-year-old other than a guitar with 4 strings on it. So that's how it started. I brought it home, and my mom told me that my dad played a little bit, and if I bugged him, he would show me how to string it up and make it work. And that's how it started. It really wasn't me wanting to play. It just kind of fell into my lap. And then, you know, when you're that age, sometimes you take the things. Sometimes things are they feel easy or natural, and you just roll with it. It's that way with sports sometimes, and it was that way with guitar. And then my dad had a few friends that played in local bands. One of the guys played in a band with my uncle in the 80s, a band called Trucks. This guy's name was Jim Graves. Still lives in the area down here. Great guitar player, but he was the first guy that came over and taught me, what the strings were, what the notes were, and just how to play cowboy chords. And I started sitting in with him at, local clubs, and that's kind of how it got rolling.
Awesome. You mentioned that it sort of just kind of came naturally. You made the sports analogy for some people. Like, I've always wondered that, you know, you're one of the greatest guitarists of all time at this point, but like, I've always wondered that whether, you know, if it's something you're born with, or if you truly believe that it's something that you can hammer away at and get better. You know, like, advice for other guitarists. Is there an element that you think that you're just naturally gifted, or how much can you make up for it with just busting your ass on the guitar?
You know, it's different for different people. I mean, I wasn't somebody that practiced a ton. But once I started playing, it was always there, and I always played. So I logged the hours in different ways. But I know people that, they didn't seem to have it in the beginning, and they worked until they did. I think you can come at it in any way. I think really it's about staying with it in the drive. I don't, some people might get there a little quicker, but as long as you get there, I don't think it matters.
Right, exactly. So you're at this young age, you're practicing here just to keep moving chronologically. some people are starting to call you a little bit of a child prodigy, but, you know, to your point, you're just loving the music. I think you get your first paid gig at 11. Is it true you you started using the slide because your hands were a little small on the guitar? Is that how you got around it?
I mean, when the guitar player that brought over a slide for the first time showed it to me, you know, it that definitely was a part of it. I mean, I think I was 9 or 10 when I first started playing slide, and just it made more sense. And then all those sounds I were hearing on the Allman Brothers records, all that Duane Allman slide stuff, it all of a sudden made sense to me. So that was it too. It was a combination, but it was definitely easier for me to play slide at that point than straight guitar. And the guitar I had, it was hard to fret that thing. It wasn't very nice. So.
What was it like? I mean, to be like a, you know, early teenager, I think like 13, to play across a guy like a legend like Buddy Guy.
Buddy was amazing. I mean, he still does this. He takes young musicians under his wing, and he shows you the ropes, and he's incredible. I mean, I learned a lot from being on stage with him. He would bring a band down to a whisper, and the way he would deal with the dynamics of the music was incredible. And he taught you the history of it while you were doing it, while you were playing with him. So, those are lessons that you're really fortunate to get. And there's really no other way to get it other than being on stage with people that have been there.
Yeah. And then the lessons continue because in your early 20s, you'd already played with, like, you know, memories of playing with Bob Dylan or Joe Walsh. I mean, you're playing with the greatest musicians of all time in your sort of your early, you know, adolescent formative years. But memories or anything you picked up from touring with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're on stage with somebody like that, I mean, a lot of these people kind of wrote the book in, you know, different styles. You know, BB was that way, certainly getting on stage with the Allman Brothers and, I mean, Dylan, all of them. I mean, those are moments while they're happening, you're fully soaking it in, and you realize that you better pay attention. There's lessons here, and there, you know, some of those moments you realize these are stories I'm going to be telling my kids and their kids. So when you're on stage with BB, you realize that wow, this is a thing that's happening. you better remember this. So. I mean, you feel really fortunate when that stuff is going on. And, there's certainly a lot to learn. You learn more in those moments than you do talking to people about it, that's for sure. I mean, people often ask, anybody ever give you advice? And, I mean, there's definitely – I've gotten some good advice along the way, but it's that real time on stage. It's something, your senses are wide open when you're in those positions, and that's when you learn the stuff. When people tell you not to mess around with heroin and other things, and they show you their track marks, that's a pretty good lesson too. But the musical ones are the ones that stick. Well, I guess that one stuck too.
Yeah, on stage and off stage lessons equally important, my friend.
That's right. Pay attention.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right, and then you know, those final few years. Right, this we're talking like right before you know you meet Susan Tedeschi, but. You know, you're doing the Derek Trucks Band thing, I think, in the early 90s. You formed them. But then also you're still touring with Allman Brothers, officially joined them, I think, you know, 99-ish. How cool was it for you, or actually important for you, too, to have your own band going on with the Trucks, but at the same time you're honoring the family legacy with Allman Brothers, and, you know, how cool to join them. You know, you grew up listening to them, so you're finally playing with them. But how important was it to have your own project going alongside with that?
Well, I mean, when I got the call to join the Allman Brothers, it was something I never thought would happen. And I was deep into the music with Yonrico and Todd and Kofi and Mike. And it wasn't even an option to not continue it. I don't know if Mike was in the band at that point. I think it was pre, but it was just, that's what we were doing. And I had to find a way to do both. I mean, it was incredible to go back and forth and playing small clubs with our guys and just feeling like you had to make the show work so you could get gas money to get to the next gig and then hop on tour with the Allman Brothers, which was just a different level of traveling. But the music felt, I mean, it felt similar. I mean, a good night's a good night, a bad night's a bad night. It doesn't matter how you're getting there and what you're traveling in. The feeling is pretty similar. So that was a good lesson. But yeah, I mean, it was never in my mind that I that I could stop doing what we were doing with our group. I felt like that was vitally important, and that was going to be my future and our future. And you know, that the Allman Brothers, it was great to be able to be a part of it and honor their legacy, but that was always their baby and not mine.
For sure. All right, we finally reached to it now, that the life-changing moment. When did you meet Susan Tedeschi? What was that initial encounter?
Well, I'd met her once before at one of my band shows at Smith's Old Bar in Atlanta. I met her briefly. And then she was on tour opening for the Allman Brothers that first year I was in the band. So that's when we really connected, you know, out on the road for months at a time. And, you know, seeing her do her thing. And you don't meet many people that have that going on. And, you know, not many women know who Howlin' Wolf is and Wayne Shorter. So that helps.
Nice. When did you guys and why did you change it up? I know you were doing, it was Soul Stew Revival at first. Why'd you make the switch to call it today to get your guys to, you know, names and family legacies in there? Or what about that, changing that up?
When we did Soul Stew, we were just kind of dipping our toes in to see how it would feel to, you know, be on the road and put a band together. And we still had our own groups at the time. And when we decided to really do it, you know, I didn't want to keep both of our solo bands going as a backup plan. I knew it had to be all or nothing. So, you know, we decided once we did it, it had to be a new thing, and we had to start from scratch. And, you know, we didn't, in those early years, we didn't really carry over a lot of the music we did with Soul Stew into this band. We tried to start it fresh. So it was really more about just making a clean break and starting something without a safety net, really.
Well, you hit the friggin' ground running, man. I think your first album together, Revelator, won the Grammy for Best Blues Album. Were you just fond memories of that album? Or, I mean, were you surprised at all that, you know, you got that much acclaim right away with that first album? Or did it feel that good as you were putting it together, that first album together?
I think we felt pretty good about it. You know, I mean, you never expect those things, but I felt like we were hitting it, and I felt like the band was it was the right thing, and everybody's head was fully in it, and it was a special time. I mean, we were just getting our studio together. We were just working with Jim Scott for the first time. I mean, we were all learning and growing quite a bit, and the band was fully focused on the task, and there were great songs on that record, and I mean, a lot of those tunes we play almost every night still. So you know, it's music that lasts. And yeah, I mean, sometimes when you're recording a track, you have that feeling that this one's going to be around a minute. And there was a lot of that on that record.
Awesome. Well, so I know that one will probably always hold a special place in your heart. The, you know, your first one that Tedeschi Trucks released, but how do you think you evolved over the next, I guess like three more albums since then? How would you even describe your own sort of, you know, evolution over those albums?
I mean, the band has gotten better every year somehow. I mean, there's been an ebb and flow, and there's some tours that are better than others, and there's definitely been times where I felt like we had to search for it again. But somehow it just keeps rolling. I mean, I just think everybody is the musicians in this band. You're just always trying to find the thing and trying to make it better. And I mean, there's been a lot of life has happened to us between then and now, and that stuff makes you play different and play better, as long as your head's in it. But yeah, somehow the band just keeps getting better. I mean, these last few tours we've done, last year was a difficult year, but the band stayed solid, and the band kind of circled the wagons and somehow got tighter and stronger as a group. And, you know, I think, you know, you're onto something, and it's a healthy thing when that keeps happening. Because that's not always the case. I've certainly been a part of things where there were times where you knew it wasn't getting better musically, and you knew you were kind of taking steps backwards and you don't know how to fix it. But with this group, we've really never had that problem. It always seems to be sometimes inching in the right direction, and sometimes it's flying ahead in the right direction. But it always seems to be a purpose for some reason.
I love it. Tell me, I remember one of the big things, I think I remember some of that crossroads Festival with Clapton. I mean, do you think that exposed your music to, you know, an even wider audience? Like, that thing was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that was great timing for this band. And, you know, the Allman Brothers were originally supposed to do, I think, that second Crossroads that we did. And then Greg got sick, and I think a liver was available. And so we filled in last minute. I mean, maybe 12 hours before we were flying up, we were trying to find the band. And not all the musicians were available. JJ was off on tour in Canada somewhere and had a gig that night. So we ended up having some guys filling in for that one show. It was really thrown together early on in the band's life. And but it happened, and it came together, and the few songs we played were great, and it really, really did propel this thing forward. So, you know, sometimes you just got to be ready when the balls hit to you. It's got to, you never know.
Exactly. And how cool was it, man? I mean, we're a D.C. station, so I got to ask, how cool was the White House? I guess that was in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, wow, it seems like a lifetime ago. There was actually real music in that place for a while. It was pretty incredible. I was on stage with Buddy Guy and B.B. King, and there were, you know, the president and first lady and people in the room that actually understood what that meant and cared about it. And it was, I mean, they were honoring B.B. King in the East Room of the White House. And, you know, there were a lot of powerful people in the room, but you knew who the man of the hour was. it was a guy from Mississippi. That was an incredible day. And, you know, just the way that place felt, it was, maybe someday we'll get back to that. It'd be nice to have music in there again. I think it keeps you sane, man. I really think it helps.
I mean, music is the medicine, man. Oh, you mentioned B.B. King. I think when you played with him out at the Hollywood Bowl, I think I read something where he paid you the ultimate compliment after you got off stage. He was like, that's the best. That's as good as I've ever heard the guitar played. I mean, is it strange for you when you see, you know, when you hear someone say something like that, or, you know, when you start projecting yourself with the all-time greats, or Rolling Stone ranks you amongst all these things that you've admired for so long? Like, I mean, tell me a little bit about the pride you must feel, but also, you know, it's rare air, man. Can you even see yourself in an all-time, you know, view like that? I mean, that's got to be a little humbling.
I mean, you don't think about it often. I mean, the Rolling Stone thing, you don't really know what to make of that. When BB pays you a compliment, that feels different. I mean, that feels like, it's your hero, and it feels like real validation. And if anything, it just makes you feel like, all right, we're on the right track. You can do what you're doing confidently and not overthink it all the time. So but yeah, those things actually give you, it does give you a little bit of, a little bit of juice going forward. And, you know, you think about those, or you feel it differently. You also look over your shoulder to see if he's talking to somebody else. it doesn't fully register.
Did he mean me?
Yeah. But I mean, he's just one of the sweetest humans of all time, you know? And, you know, he's like Buddy Guy and like some of the people we've been lucky to play with, they want that music carried on, and they want people that believe it and feel it and mean it to keep doing it. So, you know, that's when they say those things or do those things, they have a purpose. I mean, BB was always that way with Susan too. He would always have her on stage, and when she would sing, he would just light up. And those are, you know, that it gives you confidence to keep doing what you're doing. And you don't really care what other people think if BB likes it or if Little Milton likes it or John Lee Hooker. You're like, those are my people.
that's the only ranking I care about.
Totally, so.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, you've been more than generous with your time. Thanks so much. Just sort of closing final question, you know, what can we expect to hear at this Warner Theater gig? You know, maybe if any of our listeners maybe came when, you know, last time you guys came through town, or how is this a little different, or, you know, or what is the same, you know, good old treats that love, but, you know, what from the show?
You know, the beauty of this group is that everyone's always trying to dig deep into the catalog and find tunes we haven't played in a while, or even songs of ours that we, you know, haven't broken out yet, or So it's always different. I mean, we keep track of the set list that we played last year and the last time we're in a room, and you really try to make sure you don't repeat yourself too much. You never want to sacrifice the show getting there, so you don't just go obscure just to do it. But there's enough good music in everyone's catalogs at this point where we can dig pretty deep and change it up, and it keeps it fresh for everybody on stage. It keeps us on our toes, and you know, we've been breaking out of, you know, a little acoustic set of every once in a while, every few nights, especially when we're in a venue for more than one night. That's been a lot of fun. Something nice about hearing the voices when everything else is stripped down around it. And but yeah, just different sides of the band. But there's a lot to dig into. This year has been off to a really good start, so I have a good feeling about the Warner.
Awesome. Everybody, again, Tedeschi Trucks Band coming to Warner Theater now through February 22nd. So get your tickets now. Hey, thanks so much. You were great.
Thank you, man. We'll see you soon.